Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Reisman, and I'm your host on today's program, Defeating Big Media's Case for Consolidation, Point by Point. We'll hear research findings compiled by consumer and public interest groups that say we don't need more consolidation, we need less, especially if we want to promote more minority ownership of our media. But first, take a look at some headline news from our media environment. From January 20th through the 25th, the 7th Annual World Social Forum will be meeting in Nairobi, Kenya, bringing together activists, social movements, networks, coalitions, and other progressive forces for 5 days of cultural resistance and celebration. Community radio broadcasters from around the world will be stepping up to bring coverage of this important event to radio stations and the internet in English, French, Spanish, Italian, German, and other languages. This collaborative broadcast is coordinated by the World Association of Community Broadcasters, also known as AMARC. Beginning in 2001 in Porto Alegre, the World Social Forum rallies around the clarion call of another world is possible, placing social justice, international solidarity, gender equality, peace, and defense of the environment on the agenda of the world's peoples. The theme for the 2007 forum is People's Struggles, People's Alternatives. Live internet broadcasts and downloadable podcasts of AMARC coverage of the World Social Forum will be available at wsf.amarc.org. The World Social Forum website is www.wsf2007.org. And listeners to Media Geek are probably familiar with the fact that typically licenses from the FCC are necessary to make use of the electronic spectrum, whether it's broadcast radio and TV, two-way radio, or satellite communications. But there's still an awful lot of pieces of our electromagnetic spectrum that aren't yet allocated to any particular use. Senator John Sununu of New Hampshire just introduced what he calls the White Spaces Act of 2007, which would provide access to unassigned or unused portions of the broadcast spectrum between 53 and 698 megahertz. The bill would allow unlicensed use of empty channels within 90 days of when the bill is enacted, or by October 1st of this year, whichever comes first. A week beforehand, Senator John Kerry of Massachusetts reintroduced a similar bill, the Wireless Innovation Act, which specifies a 180-day window from enactment. The Sununu bill differs slightly in that it would also permit the FCC to make some licensed use of this spectrum, whereas the Kerry bill only has provisions for unlicensed use. Some examples of what you could do with empty spectrum space include wireless internet, wireless audio and video communications, other interesting digital uses maybe no one's thought of, or maybe you could have some new unlicensed radio broadcasts? Probably not, but a guy can dream, can't he? And it looks like there will be more action in the media reform front in Congress in 2007 as a result of the Democrats taking over both the Senate and the House of Representatives. If you listen to last week's show, you'll know that I was at the National Conference for Media Reform, and you'll be hearing more stuff from that conference on forthcoming week's programs. But one announcement that was made on January 13th was by Representative Maurice Hinchey of New York, who announced that he is reintroducing the Media Ownership Reform Act. Here he tells us a little bit more about what this bill would do.
The Media Ownership Reform Act, of course, had been introduced in the Republican-dominated Congress, but nobody paid any attention to it. Now the challenge to the Democratic-controlled Congress is, how much attention are we going to pay to it? And are we going to be strong enough to make the changes that are necessary to maintain openness of discussion and freedom for the exchange of views and access to all information in this democratic republic? That's a responsibility that we now bear in the Congress of the United States. And what the bill does, it reinstates that equal access clause. It reinstates the provision that just because you own a radio station, you don't own all the ideas and all the information that is broadcast out of that radio station. That you have to provide access to anybody who has a different point of view on a political issue. And if Rush Limbaugh goes out there and shoots his mouth off, somebody else has got to come up and say, Rush, you're full of baloney. Here's the real facts. Here's what really happened. And if any other right-wing radio so-called talk show host continues to do the same thing, once this legislation passes, all of that stuff will end. And the American people will then begin to get both sides of the issue.
And that was Representative Maurice Hinchey of New York speaking about his Media Ownership Reform Act he intends to introduce into Congress, speaking January 13th at the National Conference for Media Reform in Memphis, Tennessee. That equal access provision he was referring to is what used to be known as the Fairness Doctrine, which did indeed require a broadcaster to provide equal time for discussion of items of public interest and controversy, allowed people an opportunity to defend themselves if attacked on air, and gave them the right to have airtime to do so. It was done away with in the 1980s under the Reagan FCC, and the Democratic Congress made two attempts to reinstate the Fairness Doctrine, both under President Reagan and Bush the First, and both presidents did veto that bill. But there are other provisions of the Media Ownership Reform Act. This includes reinstating the cable broadcast cross-ownership rules, significantly lowering media ownership caps, as well as other options that directly address media ownership. And I'm going to step out here with a little bit of opinion on my own and say I've never been a big fan of the Fairness Doctrine, although I do understand why people would want it, because certainly the rise of right-wing radio like Rush Limbaugh and Clear Channel and so on did come with the demise of the Fairness Doctrine. But the Fairness Doctrine has a history of being abused, in addition to being used for its proper purpose. One of the more famous examples comes during the Nixon administration. The Democrats used their right of response time after a State of the Union address, and then the Republicans claimed that they actually therefore deserved to get a Fairness Doctrine response to the Democratic response and were given it by the FCC. And so you can see that really wasn't quite what the doctrine was intended to do. Of course, it was a Republican Nixon administration FCC that made that decision. I'm always a little bit leery about content restrictions, and I also wonder if including a Fairness Doctrine in this particular Media Ownership Reform Act doesn't doom it from the start. Not to say that I'm particularly feel like President Bush would sign a Media Reform Act to begin with. I kind of feel like he'd veto it, but we don't know. It will be an interesting year as other similar media reform issues continue to bubble to the surface as the FCC continues to review its rules once again on media ownership limits. And you are listening to Media Geek, your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. So now we're going to go and look more at media ownership. In this case, we're going to listen to some audio from a press conference that was held on the morning of January 12th, also at the National Conference for Media Reform, to go over some new research released by Free Press, the Consumers Union, and the Consumer Federation of America regarding the claims that big media makes about why consolidation is needed. See, they submitted comments to the FCC in its current proceedings about media ownership rules and made certain claims about why there's an economic necessity, why there's a business necessity to have more consolidation, to allow large companies to own more media outlets. And so, these researchers have taken a lot of these claims point by point and looked at the actual data and refuted them. So it's not just based upon ideology, it's being based on actual facts and research. So we'll hear from Gene Kimmelman from the Consumers Union, who'll give us an introduction, and Reverend Jesse Jackson from Rainbow Push, who will put this research in perspective, especially from the standpoint of minority ownership and access to the airwaves. And then we'll hear from Derek Turner, who's the research director of Free Press and who is a co-author on many of these studies.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Gene Kimmelman. I'm Vice President for Federal and International Affairs with Consumers Union, the publisher of Consumer Reports, and I'm honored to be here this morning with Reverend Jackson, Derek Turner from Free Press, Mark Cooper from the Consumer Federation of America. We will be releasing a number of studies and a letter to the Federal Communications Commission this morning, and we want to explain to you why we're here. We are responding, along with the more than 3,000 people here, actively engaged in leading this fight to an enormous push by major media corporations to require the federal government to allow them to own the dominant newspaper that people read in their community, the dominant television station, or two, or three, in that same community, along with a variety of radio properties, cable properties, internet access services in that same community, in their desire to increase profits and expand their control of media. And we are here because we have a federal government that has expressed a desire to support this endeavor to allow massive consolidation and control of the most important sources of local news and information in our communities. We need to respond to that. We start off as a broad coalition today releasing a letter from civil rights organizations, consumer organizations, public interest organizations across the country requesting that the Federal Communications Commission address the abysmal problem of a lack of minority ownership and minority participation in media before it ever considers these issues of further consolidation. We're also here to release studies that directly challenge the core claims of the large media companies about why consolidation, from their perspective, is such a good thing. These studies will be further described by the authors, Derek Turner and Mark Cooper, in just a minute. And they're being filed next week at the Federal Communications Commission as comments in response to this industry push and governmental openness to allow more consolidation. But before we turn to explaining the details of these analyses, I'd like to ask Reverend Jackson to address really the broader issues at stake in this fight for diversity, competition, and fairness in media. Reverend Jackson.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here with you today. The reason why LSU could beat Notre Dame, the reason why you could have these upsets, as it were, is because speculation and inheritance had nothing to do with outcome. Because whenever the playing field is even and the rules are public and the goals are clear, we all have a chance. But if the owner of the team had the referees on his payroll, you couldn't trust the outcome of the game. And in media, when too few people own too much media, it undermines every promise democracy ever made. When GE owns NBC and makes profit from the war, the president of Viacom, which owns CBS, can endorse Bush from Japan and be rather blatant as to why he did it. He stands to benefit from it. When Disney owns ABC, this interest is in tax considerations. It undermines the integrity of the process. So we have more and more media owned and controlled by few and fewer, but narrow and narrow interests. So much of America is seen through a keyhole and not through a door. And often a finger can be stuck in that keyhole. You simply see nothing. When have you last seen an American farmer on a Sunday morning talk show? When have you last seen an African American or Latino congressional caucus leader on national television on a Sunday morning news show? And substantially urban America and Southwest has been driven by the black and Latino vote. The 100 largest cities, a majority black and brown. The radio began around 1920. The government gave all the licenses to white males only. And they learned how to run stations. Around 1940, the government developed something called television and gave all channels to white males only. Then they could pass on as inheritance to their children these stations, these properties. And so because of the impact of media ownership, under the Carter administration, we got something called tax certificate, Well, whites who have been given these stations by lottery could sell to black or brown and get a tax benefit. That's how Bob Johnson and BET got in. That's how Kathy Hughes and TV One and Radio One got in. The very first act killed by the Gingrich forces, the very first act, was to kill a tax certificate. So the language in the very first act, Democrats are restore is the tax certificate. So if Clear Channel is going to do it, Clear Channel is going to do a big sellout, we'll have a reasonable chance to own radio stations again. The tax certificate must be in the first 100 hours. That's why the issue of broader, more local, more diverse ownership gives us more diverse opinion, more diverse points of view. And that's why this conference, a free, fair, and open press is good for the healing of America. Thank you very much.
Now, Derek Turner and Mark Cooper will explain the findings of our studies that we're submitting to the Federal Communications Commission. Derek.
Thank you, Gene. Thank you, Reverend. Thank you, Kim, Rainbow Push, for all your hard work in this area. My name is Derek Turner. I'm the research director at Free Press, and I'm going to give an overview of some of the details of the six studies that we're releasing today. So the FCC is now revisiting the issue of media ownership like they did in 2003. And under the leadership of Chairman Kevin Martin, they appear poised to do what they did in 2003 and eliminate the few remaining protections that keep big media from total domination of the public sphere. The industry giants who are pushing these changes, they're trotting out the same old tired arguments that they've used before to make their case to the FCC. They claim poverty, arguing that the broadcast sector is in such dire financial straits that consolidation and deregulation is the only thing that will save them. They claim that cable TV and the internet have completely altered the media marketplace to the point where these protections are no longer needed. They claim that there's no harm from consolidation, and in fact, they claim that relationships like duopolies and cross-ownership stations actually produce benefits in terms of more local news and public affairs. However, these claims just do not withstand scrutiny. In our initial comments to the FCC and in the six research studies that we're releasing today, we dismantle their case for deregulation. And I'll give you some highlights about how absurd some of their arguments are. First, in their comments to the FCC, the National Association of Broadcasters tried to claim financial problems by reporting financial data from only odd-numbered years and ignoring financial data from even-numbered years. And they claim to do this because of how events in odd-numbered years, such as elections, mess up the financial data. But so we actually went back and looked at the financial data, and of course, what you expect is that, like businesses which are cyclical, like retail sector, so is the broadcast sector. In the even-numbered years, they do substantially better, and in fact, 2006 is likely will be the best year they've ever had. Second, on the internet, it hasn't changed everything. I wish it had, and maybe it one day will. But right now, it's not a frequently or important source for local news. In some survey data that we conducted, only 4% of the respondents reported that the internet was the most important source for local news. And when you ask people, those 4%, where they went, over half cited the website of a local television station or a local newspaper. Industry commenters, they also specifically highlighted the rise of so-called hyper-local websites, things like Gothamist.com that you may be familiar with. But I encourage you to actually go look at these websites and look at their content and see who their audiences are. Our research shows that these websites just don't have the resources to produce hard-hitting original local news reporting, and they don't do it. In our sample, less than 3% of the stories were actually original reporting on hard news topics. And the audiences of these websites are also very small and transient. The websites of the newspapers in the same market, their audience size is over 100 times as great. Only 8% of the visitors to hyperlocal websites visited the site between 2 and 30 times per month, whereas a third of the visitors to a traditional newspaper website visited between 2 and 30 times per month. And big media's claim of no harm is simply untrue. For example, in our study, Out of the Picture, which looked at minority ownership of television stations, we found that FCC deregulatory policy in the late 1990s led to a significant drop in the number of minority-owned stations. In fact, there was a 30% decrease in the number of African-American-owned stations since 1998. Our research also showed that unambiguously, if you have further consolidation, it will lead to a drop in minority ownership, which is already at a level of around 3%. So I'd like to thank my colleagues, Gene at Consumers Union and Mark at Consumer Federation of America, as well as my assistant, Adam Lin, who contributed heavily to this research.
And that was Derek Turner, who is the research director for Free Press, talking about studies on media ownership. Before that was Reverend Jesse Jackson from the Rainbow Push Coalition, and introducing was Gene Kimmelman of the Consumers Union. You are listening to Media Geek, your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. I'm your host, Paul Reese-Mandel. Check out Media Geek online at MediaGeek.net. Get the radio show at radio.MediaGeek.net. And next we'll hear Dr. Mark Cooper from the Consumer Federation of America.
In the papers today and in the book, we've compiled a great deal of research. Let me just give you simple summary statistics to pick up on what Derek has been talking about. There is in America at least 75,000, maybe as many as 100,000 people who work in the profession and the occupation of creating news, newsroom staff. If you go and count the number of people who actually work in this profession, it's about 100,000 people. And that includes daily newspapers, weekly newspapers, TV stations, and radio stations. Radios don't produce a lot of news, but there are a few that do. Then you look at the question of, well, you know, the cable guys now have news departments, and Derek mentioned that. And so we counted the number of people who are actually in those newsrooms. And we found 450 compared to 100,000, right? So yes, that's a new addition to the infrastructure of news in America, but it certainly is not a revolution by any stretch of the imagination. The number of people into the traditional media producing news outweighs the number of people on the cable networks 200 to 1. Is that a justification for allowing consolidation? We think not. If you look at the alternative websites and look at the traffic to those websites, combining physical space, newspapers still push a lot of paper out there, and the traffic to their websites, the ratio is 1,500 to 1. 1,500 people read a newspaper every month for every one person who goes to one of those alternative websites. It's great that those alternative websites are there, but they haven't created the revolution yet. So maybe in 10 years or 20 years, when we do get a massive change, we can then consider whether or not it's possible to allow this consolidation. So those are the real statistics, and I want to start from the infrastructure of journalism in this country, because we've done a bunch of financial analyses. Derek mentioned the ha-ha analysis of, hey, don't include the election year, which is like telling a retailer, well, we're not going to analyze between Thanksgiving and New Year's Day. Why? Well, that's a busy season, and we're never sure how good it's going to be. Or like if you have a business in Ocean City, Maryland, or any seaside resort, was, hey, we're not going to analyze between Memorial Day and Labor Day. Well, you know, we're never sure how good the season's going to be. Come on, that's silly. And they actually put that in and said, we don't include election years. Well, in America, still, elections occur every 2 years in the even-numbered years. It turns out Olympics also occur every 2 years. They make a lot of money during those even-numbered years. But the more interesting question is, if you look at the fundamental economics of the industry, and this is my last point, last week the New York Times sold its 9 TV stations. And we, in the book, we look at the sale of the Knight Ridder papers to McClatchy. It turns out they got a really good price for those TV stations. They got more on a cash flow basis, which is how people measure this, than Adelphia got. The cable systems are supposed to be robust, and Adelphia was only sold for 11 times cash flow. The New York Times sold its TV stations for 14 times, 13 or 14 times cash flow. And these were not big market TV stations. These were all middle market TV stations. And the interesting thing is the New York Times was asked, well, why did you sell these TV stations? And they said, you know, we're a newspaper. We got to get back to that business, and we got to figure out how to sell newspapers online. They've recognized that their future is in the news business and digital distribution. And it is really fascinating. If you look at the troubled chains, we've heard about the Knight Ridder chain. Obviously, they were sold. We hear about Tribune. If you look at their flagship newspapers, they are the worst performing bodies, entities, in the newspaper business in the online world. They have botched the transition to digital distribution. And so on the one hand, while they've now discovered that they have to figure out what to do in cyberspace, They still frequently continue down the old path of firing reporters, who are, of course, the people who produce the content that attracts the eyeballs. So our view of the industry is that consolidation and conglomeration in physical space will not solve the challenge of cyberspace. Consolidation and conglomeration in physical space, especially when the bean counters look at the bottom line and say, hey, the first thing we have to do is reduce our ability to produce the product that we live by. They call it in the industry eating your seed corn. Right? Farmers are smart enough to keep the seed corn because they have to plant next year. And so then if you look at the top performing newspapers in America, for every 3 readers in physical space they have 1 reader in cyberspace. A third, a quarter of their readers now come online. The New York Times is at the top of the list. They just sold their TV stations. They understand. Tribune is trying to break itself up, and for a variety of reasons, there are a lot of people who want to buy their newspapers, people who think there's a real business there. Tribune is at the bottom of the list in cyberspace. So that is the confrontation at the FCC now. An industry which says, hey, look, we want to keep doing the old things. We want to get bigger, more consolidated, more conglomerated, and a reality in which we need journalism. We need those 100,000 people, and the solution is to have more of them figure out how to distribute the content they produce rather than shrink the industry and essentially eat your own seed corn.
And that was Dr. Mark Cooper from the Consumer Federation of America providing analysis to research reports on what big media claims is the basis for them needing more consolidation, needing to own more media outlets. And of course, he's making the case for less. If you want to learn more about those reports, go to freepress.net, stopbigmedia.com, and you can read more about that. That brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'm host and producer Paul Riesmandel. I'll be back in 1 week with another half-hour look at independent and grassroots media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. In the meantime, check out the frequently updated Media Geek blog at MediaGeek.net. The program can be downloaded at radio.MediaGeek.net, where you can also subscribe to the podcast. Media Geek is produced at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois. The program is also heard on 10 other community stations around North America. They are Radio Free Moscow in Moscow, Idaho, KQRP in Salida, California, KRBS in Oroville, California, WSLR in Sarasota, Florida, WTND in Macomb, Illinois, WRFA in Jamestown, New York, CKDU in Halifax, Nova Scotia, WYQZ in Warrenton, Bealeton, Virginia, Free Radio Olympia in Olympia, Washington, and Free Radio San Diego. Media Geek is free to air on your local community station as well. Just email Paul at MediaGeek.net. That's also the address where you can send your comments about the program. Once again, that's Paul at MediaGeek.net. Thanks for tuning in.